Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to Loose Units. I'm Paul Verhoeven and my dad, John Verhoeven, is with me. And this episode, Dad and I are finally going to delve into some stories that we've been circling around for some time. And this is a very, very heavy episode. And we just want to let you know up front that we will be discussing suicide and bullying. So consider this your trigger warning. If this isn't your kind of thing or if you worry that you'll be triggered, please feel free to skip this episode and tune in next episode. And, you know, just take a breather and join us next time. But before we get into any of this, we do think it's very, very important, Dad, and I think it's super crucial to reach out and talk to people if you're struggling or if you're having like really bad thoughts. So we'd like to give you some numbers up ahead. Lifeline's number, if you want to give them a call, is 131114. And you can also call Beyond Blue. They're a fantastic service on 1-300-224-636. And we'll be giving those numbers again at the end of the episode. So don't stress if you haven't got them. But yeah, this episode's obviously going to be pretty intense, but we think it's very important. And Dad, you've been wanting to tell these stories a lot throughout this season of Loose Units. And you mentioned to me that something happened to you when you were running on the beach recently.
Yes. Well, firstly, hi to everyone. So a couple of things about this whole thing, Paul. One of them is that, because I know the listeners like to hear all the little tidbits. Is it TIT or TID?
It's definitely tidbits. TID. Tidbits is a whole other podcast.
I love tidbits too. So all the listeners know my little preamble about soft sand running, God, and ocean swimming. But it's getting so cold in the ocean that, I mean, I haven't thawed out yet. And I've had a hot shower.
Right. But
at home,
because you run, I mean, you run your soft sand. We like to make a lot of fun here at Loose Units about Dad's incessant talk about his soft sand running and his ocean swimming. But I guess the point is that it was this soft sand running and ocean swimming that sort of dumped you neck deep into this anecdote you're about to tell us, yeah?
That's right, yeah. Thanks for bringing me back on track, Paul. I really appreciate it. And I probably need it. So there's a fair bit of trepidation surrounding this topic or these topics. You know, this is probably the podcast out of all the ones we've ever done. We've been going for some years now.
Yeah.
In fact, if I look out our kitchen window, I can see a lovely sort of 1910 apartment. And funnily enough, it's called Kyoto, which is a place we've all been to. But you and Tegan stayed there 2 years ago. It was an Airbnb. And you and I sat in this weird, tiny little room with a sloping floor.
Mm.
And we recorded some of our very first, in fact, maybe even the first podcast. Isn't that amazing?
We did. We recorded the very, very first Loose Units. If you go back and listen to episode one, I'll be honest, Dad, it sort of sounds like it was recorded in a tiny kitchen across from you. That's, you know, yeah.
It did. But Paul, the topics that we're going to discuss today have always been in the back and sometimes the front of my mind, and they're tough topics to talk about. You were telling me that you got in touch with Beyond Blue to brief them over this particular podcast?
Yes, we actually really were planning on collaborating with Beyond Blue, but they've just been flooded with requests lately and they just couldn't fit us in. But they, you know, we've really wanted to kind of do due diligence and sort of make sure that everyone has all the correct.
Yep.
We don't want to mess up the terminology. This is a really, really fragile thing, you know.
Yeah, and I want everyone to know that Paul and I are really fair dinkum, and I'm sure you all know we are, but we're super fair dinkum on this particular topics. And a lot of people don't, they sort of, these are the topics in life that people just don't talk about for lots of reasons. So we're going to get right into it.
Mm.
So back to what you were saying, Paul, I was running with a mate of mine on the beach. And just to sort of or just to sort of let the listeners know once again, what I do is that I wake up about 5:45. I live in the city and I drive in the dark because it's winter in my ute to Queenscliff Beach. I get out, it's pitch black. I meet up with a mate, a Danish friend, and we soft sand run. We run from Queenscliff to Manly and back. It's so cold that after about, I guess, maybe 2 or 3 minutes, if you can imagine having local anaesthetic, numerous injections just pumped into your feet, my feet go completely numb. And it's sometimes there's a wind blowing and, okay, trust me, Paul, I'm getting to the point. So we're running along a few mornings ago and we heard a fire engine and it was coming from the north down into Manly. And I said to my Danish friend, I said, oh, that's 69. He said, oh, 69, what's that? I said, that's DY Fire Station. And we could hear the siren coming down. And what DY Fire Station invariably did, because every single fire call, you always have two vehicles responding.
Sure.
So Manly had gone to an incident, and generally it's an automatic fire alarm, AFA for short, and invariably either Mossman or DY backed them up. So we could hear the siren, and 99 times out of 100, they come via the beach. They come into Manly, but I could also hear the other siren. It was like an echo. And I said to my friend, oh, that's 24, that's Manly. So there are two, we could hear distinctly two fire engines. Mm-hmm. And we're running along and it's pretty dark and it's freezing. And when 69's motor passed us, it was sort of above us because we're down on the sand, it's heading into Manly. And I'm thinking, I said to my friend, I said, look, we can't smell any smoke. And so it's probably an AFA. And then I heard a third appliance, and it was north of where we were.
Yeah.
DY had already passed us, and it was coming down the same route. And then I thought, hang on a sec, that's three fire engines. That's weird. And I said to my friend, I said, you can't smell any smoke. There were strong winds blowing, and if there had been a fire, we definitely would have smelled something. And sure. Instinctively said to his name's Chris. I said, Chris, it's probably an incident at North Head. And on the balance of probabilities, knowing what I know, it's more than likely someone has
died by suicide. Yeah.
Has died by suicide. And we kept running. Now, that was just a weird conversation based on, I'm just putting together some facts that I, as I saw it, based on my experience. We finished our run. We're sitting on a bench having a coffee. Mm-hmm. We look out and down towards Manly and past towards sort of North Head around the headland. And all of a sudden I see, can you guess what I saw?
No.
I saw a police launch. And they'd come between the heads, come out from Sydney.
Oh, you mean like, okay, so they'd sent a boat out.
They'd sent a boat, which is standard procedure.
Yep.
And I saw it and it had the red and blue lights flashing. And that was sort of that final seal where I said to my friend, and in a funny sort of sad way, he was pretty impressed with my powers of deduction. Hmm. I mean, for me, it wasn't rocket science, but it was where everything just fell into place. Everything aligned. And then I realized that, you know, my sad sort of thoughts and fears were definitely
found,
realized. So, So on the balance of probabilities, and it would not have been a rock fisherman because the seas were calm. They were like a mill pond.
Right.
So, then I had myself, as a young firefighter at Manly, I'd been to numerous, incidents at North Head where people had jumped. That's sort of pretty intense.
You obviously dealt with a lot of death by suicide when you were in the police force. And I think this season of Loose Units began with a pretty harrowing story about, or maybe it was halfway through the series. It's been a very, very, we're past 30 episodes for this season. So you've told a lot of stories to myself and the listeners. But I think the thing that you kept saying to me off the mic was that, and I wasn't aware of this, was that bullying was a really, really big problem in the fire brigade. And as someone who was very badly bullied, that really resonated with me. Could you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yes. Do you mind if I go back just a little bit or would you like me to sort of dive in there and see where it takes us?
Where were you going to go back?
Well, I was going to go back to when I was a little boy in Armidale.
You encountered a lot of death by suicide in your different, you know, iterations of emergency services. But how early, how far back do you recall having encountered this as a thing?
I was living in Armidale. And I would
have been... Oh, you were a kid. So this is when you were a kid.
Yeah.
Jesus. Okay.
And we had a babysitter, and her name was Mrs. Simpson. And she had black curly hair and glasses, and she was, I guess, the quintessential, if you had to do a caricature of a babysitter, she would have been definitely of the type.
Right.
And she had two boys. One of them was a lovely guy who was, I remember him, he would have been late teens. He was sort of a knockabout sort of a guy. He struck me as being kind of a guy that had worked on the land, you know, calloused hands, you know, big sort of riding boots and, you know, pretty good style of a bloke. And then the older brother had glasses and he was practicing to be a lawyer, a solicitor. You know, Armidale's a country town with about 25,000 people. This is in the 60s, and I remember my mother telling me that the younger son, who was the sort of the knockabout guy, and this is where you, and I'm saying that, I'm punctuating the fact that he was a knockabout sort of guy in a country town because it's apt in terms of the context of where this story is going, and that is that, and it's all about you can't make judgment or you we all do make sort of preconceptions about people, and quite often we're wrong. Yeah. But this particular guy, he was gay. And what happened was he found it so difficult in Armidale, and because of the environment, he took his own life. And his mother, Mrs. Simpson, our babysitter, and she was more than a babysitter. She was used to look after my sisters when Mum had to go back to teaching.
Yeah.
So she was basically there, you know, pretty well every day during the week. And she came home one afternoon and she found her son who'd used a firearm, and he'd shot himself under his bed in his bedroom. And what a terrible discovery for the poor mum.
Yeah.
And it all came out all because he was gay and he just didn't know how to reconcile, and obviously, thankfully, things have dramatically changed. But that's the first time, as a young kid, I became aware that someone had taken their own life.
Yeah.
So that was pretty heavy at the time, but I didn't fully grasp, you know, all the subtle nuances associated with that particular incident.
Rural Australia has a real... It's a bit of a, you know, if you'll forgive the word, pandemic. I mean, Tegan and I were staying in Mafra with Tegan's folks, and it was around Christmas, and we were told that there was this gorgeous house that had this incredible Christmas lights display, and all the money went towards charity. And we drove up there and had to turn off our GPS, and it was really hard to get to. And as we ran this corner, it's like the whole farm has been turned into this, like, winter wonderland sort of thing. There's different installations, and there's the amount of lights there could have comfortably lit up a capital city. Like, it was incredible. So much love had gone into this place. And as we're rounding the corner around one of the displays, there was this huge Christmas tree covered in baubles, and there were pens and pieces of paper next to it. And we read this sign, and it basically said, if you've lost a loved one to suicide, then can you, in memory of them, make a donation and maybe write their name on a bauble and pop it on the tree. And we looked at the tree, and it was, Dad, this was like 3 meters high, covered, like not a single space on this thing. And all the proceeds went to Beyond Blue, I believe in memory of the guy who ran the farm. I think maybe his brother passed away from suicide. And it was just, we didn't realize it was so prevalent in that part of the country. Mm-hmm. And Beyond Blue is one of those organizations that will just talk to you. And I think that is such an amazing service.
Yeah, incredible. Yeah. it's not good, particularly if you're feeling terrible and you just feel that no one can understand or no one's listening, or you don't want to trouble them, or, you know, there are so many things that must go through the minds, and statistically it seems to be more males. But I think that, look, I'm not, okay, I'm going to give myself a bit of a an indemnity here by saying, you know, I'm not an expert. However, I can tell the dear listeners that, you know, over 20 years, I've had more than my fair share. And of course, I did end up in forensics. And, you know, one of the many things that I used to do was go to suicides. And I went to numerous, far too many to remember.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to sort of be somewhat chronological. I'd also like to, before we go deep, I also want to talk about when I went to Beacon Hill High School.
Yes.
They had an initiation day. Did they ever do that at your school, any of your high schools?
I'm not sure. Is that where you kind of go along to the school and they sort of just show you around? Or is
this
more like
hazing?
No, this
is where they would hang boys by the tie.
What?
Down on the soccer field, on the goalposts.
Wait, what?
Yeah, hang them by the neck.
Hang on. When you say they, who are you talking about?
Mainly the sixth form bullies.
Yeah, as you'll know, Dad, I had a really bad time with bullies, but at no point was I hung by the neck.
Yeah, Beacon Hill High, that was one of the things they used to do. And of course, you know, pretty well, obviously every single time the tie'd break, which is a good thing.
Yeah.
The police force in New South Wales, to stop people choking police officers by the neck with their ties, developed the clip-on tie.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems. But getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to one full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
And that came about purely from a safety point of view.
And that wasn't just because police officers weren't deft enough with their fingers to actually tie ties.
I was very good at doing it, and I used to do what was called the double knot.
The double knot?
Yeah, I did a double
knot. Like a Windsor kind of thing? Like a double Windsor?
I think that's what it's called, the big fat thing.
Not the school tie knot, which isn't really a proper knot. It's just...
No. And it was amazing when I joined the police force and they handed us the tie to wear, which looked pretty smart, but it was just a clip-on thing.
Sure.
And that's, as I said, so no one could grab your tie and choke you. So the bullying at my high school was from day one, but this also leads me to something, and that is that bullies pick on the weakest, the most vulnerable. And it's like the big cats. You know how they pick on a particular animal within the herd? and right. they focus and they, because they know, like they'll go for the slowest, the weakest, and they'll wear them, they'll run them down.
Well, the problem with bullying is that they don't go for the slowest or the weakest. They go for sometimes the gentlest, the quietest. These aren't signs. Yeah. I mean, these aren't actual signs of weakness from an evolutionary standpoint.
No, of course not.
But it's a
perceived difference. It's a chink in the armor with these people. And make no mistake that girls bully as well. I've been involved in numerous incidents, mainly in the police force, horrendous cases of bullying.
One of the things I'm very curious about is obviously the implication here is that bullying can push people over the edge and push them to a point where they might want to take their own life.
That's
right. Obviously, that is an incredibly complex, fraught issue, and we're not experts by any means. But how often did this happen in your experience during the emergency services? Because I know that you mentioned in passing, and I haven't wanted to mention this on the mic, but you have told me about statistically how many people. I mean, do you want to talk about your time in the fire brigade, or do you want to work chronologically?
No. We'll chat about the fire brigade and we can come back to the police force.
Okay.
Later, but when I joined the New South Wales Fire Brigades, we were at the training academy was at Alexandria, and there were 10 guys in my class, uh-huh. Including me. And I remember the makeup of the people in my class. I can remember in minute detail the characters. I remember exactly what they looked like, you know, their backgrounds, their attitudes towards certain things. And there was one guy in my class, and I felt sorry for him. And I hope that doesn't come across badly, but I genuinely...
Well, compassion is, you know, not a bad thing.
No, but I genuinely, I've always sort of in a group situation, if I see someone that's vulnerable or not having a good time or a bit sad or lonely or quiet, I am drawn to those people because I perhaps partially I'm inquisitive as to why they're feeling that way. But, I'm not sort of saying I like to go and just help people, but... You know, I think it's important to be inclusive. And it was a small class, and I'd come from the police force, so I'd been around. And this particular guy, he'd been a school teacher, and pretty well from day one, there were certain people. One in particular, there was a bully in our class. He knows exactly who he is, and smart ass fuckwit, and that's what I think of him now. So he just needled this guy, and this guy. Who had been a school teacher, he was very vulnerable. And one of the things that this bully and a few others used to do is they regularly used to put eggs in his boots, soft, like uncooked eggs. And it happened so many times, and he'd go to put his boots on and he'd crush the egg as his foot went down into these. These were the big knee-high boots. And I'd be sort of just an observer. But... You could see the vulnerability, and he had a sadness in his eyes. And I'm not speaking with the benefit of hindsight. I'm actually speaking as I saw it at the time. And it's obviously left a bit of a mark on me because that happened pretty well 30 years ago, pretty well probably this year.
Right.
Yeah, actually 30 years this year. And I remember him. And... Christine and I, we had a barbecue at the end of the season, like our, you know, the end of class to celebrate. And we had it at our place and we invited everyone. And then we all went out as a group, the 10 of us, and we went to Chinatown. And I remember he wore, I mean, tell me this isn't bizarre that I remember such detail. So it obviously had a bit of an impact. And I haven't actually thought about this particular night until now. But I even remember the shirt he was wearing. He was wearing a paisley shirt, and I remember that a couple of the guys, just a few, really bagged him out, and it made him feel very uncomfortable. This is the beginning of the night. And he, you could sense that he was awkward. He was really smart, and he was sensitive. Years later, I found out that he took his own life, which I found very upsetting. And I'm not in any way saying that he took his life as a result of anything that happened in our class. It was, right. In fairness, some time later, probably maybe 10 years later. But the tragedy is that he took his own life. And you recall when I did my apprenticeship?
Yes. The toolmaking apprenticeship,
thing, which, for the record, I hated every second of it, okay. But only for the entire duration of the apprenticeship. And I absolutely detested it for lots of reasons. I was miserable. When I was doing my apprenticeship, I was probably in my third year, and this young guy, he was 15 at the time. He had blonde hair. He was a really sweet kid. He came in and he was just sort of trying out, seeing whether he'd like to do an apprenticeship at this particular firm.
Yeah.
And, you know, I sort of took him under my wing and showed him the ropes. And, you know, it was difficult for me because I wanted to say to him, look, get the fuck out of this place. But, you know, I couldn't. And,
why couldn't you?
And then years later.
Okay. Why couldn't you?
Theoretically,
why couldn't you? Something occurred to me during the last story about the fire brigade stuff. At any point during that bullying of the guy, did you not think about maybe saying something?
I said lots of things to lots of people all the time.
What kind of steps did you... I mean, first of all, I'm not saying that you had to, but obviously, as someone who was bullied, there are many circumstances in which I would have just loved someone to speak up. Like, I had friends who would just stand there and sort of watch because I think they just thought it was, you know, just like the weather, it's the thing that happens. Paul just gets bullied. So I'm very curious as to
It was a kind of... it was sort of a kind of a bullying environment. The bullying came from the top.
Is this in the fire brigade proper, or is this at the academy? Now, when you talked us through your time at the academy, there were various stages, as I recall, as the numbers were getting whittled down. At what stage of the training was this?
Oh, well, in relation to the bullying of this particular guy, would have been in the first, let's say, the training went for maybe 4 months.
So this is the first intake before you end up, because I know at one point you ended up in like a building in the city jumping through a jungle gym. This is before that.
That was recruiting. That was the recruiting process. This is once we've all been accepted into the New South Wales Fire Brigades, all 110 of us for that entire year. Okay.
Yeah. So this guy's already made the cut. He's already proved that he's got what it takes.
He's in our class, a class of 10.
That's a really interesting quirk to this, because I just thought there would be a certain dog eat dog, eliminate the weak attitude if everyone's effectively auditioning against
each other. Oh, you mean like when I was doing the exam at New South Wales University and the guy had a heart attack next to me and I just looked down and then kept going?
Yeah, that's pretty stressful, Dad.
Yeah. But I needed to do that because I needed to get into the fire brigade. And, you know,
But if you'd given him the heart attack, that would be a better analogue for this story. But I guess what I'm saying is there is something about the competitiveness and the relentlessness of an audition environment that wouldn't forgive it, but would at least explain it in certain types of dickheads. Whereas once you've all crossed the line and made it through and have proven that you're all part of this fraternity, logically speaking, in my head, at least, my naive head at least, I'm thinking, well, he's one of us. Why would we push him around? And you're saying that clearly wasn't the case.
Yeah, but we all came from different backgrounds. In many, many different ages. You know, there were people in my class that I regarded as relatively immature, in their teens, 18, 19-year-olds. And there were guys in their 40s. That's a big difference in a class.
Of course.
And it doesn't take long. Because of my background in the police force, I already had respect from the teachers, teaching staff. Yeah. I'd been around. But what I will say in relation to this guy being bullied and anyone that I ever see being bullied, and anyone that knows me knows that if I give them that look, in other words, the offender, the bully, I only have to give them the look and they get the message. But it's not the sort of bullying where you go up and you actually grab them and throw them away from or get drag them off. It's not that sort of... That's not the bullying. A lot of it's psychological. And also you don't always know how things are being taken or misconstrued by the victim as well, because, you know, if you're a very sensitive person, a lot of things can really upset you because you can kill someone with a word. A good deed... You can elevate. you can put down in domestic violence situations throughout this country and throughout the world, mainly men. That's an undeniable fact. They don't necessarily have to smack or hit or choke or bash their partner. There are other more insidious ways of psychologically torturing. There are no scars, no physical scars. The lady doesn't come, she's not bruised, you know, she doesn't have a black eye. And then the terrible thing also is that women, like a friend of mine, she works at an auction house and she had a black eye a couple of months ago and she'd walked into a cupboard. But as a protective male who'd been in the police force and had seen lots of bad shit, I've seen women beaten to death. So, you know, but the natural reaction for a lot of people is, oh, shit, someone's hit you. And that's not always the case.
And you can talk to me. And what's interesting is I'd learned about this recently. I was having trouble quantifying what kind of bullying I went through. And there were a few really obvious and very intense specific instances of where people would inflict very bad violence on me or, you know, really, really over-the-top
shocking
stuff.
Your mother and I went up to your school. As the listeners may or may not recall, a guy had got a welding brush and taken out the back of your knee. And we went up to the school. That's two ex-police officers fronted the school. And the deputy principal at St. Paul's Manly, God, it feels good saying that, they tried to apportion blame to you. And you were, and as listeners may or may not know, but I will restate, is that you are a true pacifist and a good bloke to boot. And these, oh God, we had to literally threaten serious legal action against the school and against this particular guy. I mean, you know, bullying is, you used to be held on the bus and as a parent, to be a parent and if you've got a child who's being bullied at any age, imagine if you're a parent and you've got, or you're a brother or sister and you've got a sibling in the military, for example. What happens if they're in the Army, Navy, or Air Force and they're in their mid-20s? They're in their 30s. They're in their 40s. They've still got parents alive and they're being bullied.
Yeah.
The grief and the sadness and the frustration and that terrible feeling that, because bullying has no age barrier.
No, and it really
does. Elderly people get boiled. Get bullied. My father's just gone into a nursing home, which is a fucking nightmare. And there are people in that work in these nursing homes, and they bully elderly people. It's so insidious, and people bully also. And often get away with it because they pick their moment. You know, there are lots of ways to bully.
Can I run something by you? So one of the things I learned recently, because I was doing some research on bullying, because obviously I tried not to look very hard at what I went through because it's traumatic. But one of the things that I learned about were microaggressions, which is effectively where someone does a small thing hundreds of times. Mm. And you can't point to any specific incident, but it adds up. It's like a toxin that accumulates in the bloodstream, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So what you're effectively up against is you can't point to any one thing and go, well, they did this, but you're basically creating this constant deluge of tiny problems. And obviously people who are from different minorities, ethnic backgrounds, different genders, you know, they're from the LGBTI community or whatever, they're way more susceptible to this stuff. But for some reason, if you've attracted the ire of a group of Neanderthals, and let's say you're in a very male-heavy area like the fire brigade, and let's say you're a very gentle soul, then what you might be up against is a daily barrage of tiny moments which just chip away at you. And it's that stuff that you have to really look out for. And I think if I can beg listeners to do anything, it's that if you see this shit happening, just call the person out on it. Because these little things might seem little, but when you see a little thing happening, that's not the only time it's happening. It's happening all the time. It's happening behind your back. It's in a look. It's in an email. It's in the inflection of their voice. Some people just enjoy eating away at other people. And I think you actually can, to a degree, weigh in and help, I think.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Well, The young guy that came along, you said to me, why couldn't I tell him not to, you know, work there? Well, you can't, because he may have really liked it.
Yeah.
Just because I hated it doesn't mean everyone else hates it. But anyway, look, he ended up being in my class as well. So, and he was a lovely guy. A couple of years ago, he took his own life. Yeah, so that was out of a class of 10 in the New South Wales Fire Brigades. I hate to use statistics, but I will because it's really impactful because it sounds really bad. And I can say that 20% of my class took their own lives. So of the 10 of us, 2 took their own lives. I'm not going to...
We can talk more about that next episode if you like. Because what's happened, folks, is that we've reached the end of an episode and there's so much more to talk about. So I think what we're going to do is we're going to turn this into, and you've probably noticed this by now if you've seen the title of the episode, but we're going to turn this into a two-parter. So we will wrap this episode up and we will continue on Tuesday. So obviously, it's been a very heavy episode, but if you are feeling susceptible, if you want to reach out and talk to somebody, if you're struggling, and it's totally fine to struggle, by the way, there is nothing wrong with feeling the things you're feeling. So if you want to give anyone a call, Lifeline is a fantastic service. Their number is 131114, or Beyond Blue, who we've mentioned a few times, they're incredible. And their number is 1-300-224-636. And those numbers will be available in the little description box in the text below the episode, so you can grab those anytime. We will see you next week for more Loose Units. Bye.
Bye.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.